This is going to
Hello.
Where what's going on.
Here we are. This is our 34th podcast. It's the Comic Book Book Club. This month was was Jason's
episode
was Jason's pick.
Not the real Jason.
Yeah, not the real Jason. The other Jason. His doppelganger.
The poor copy.
And maybe you can tell us what it was, Jason.
It was a ploy to get Chad to come to one of these things. That's exactly what it was.
This is Chad's second one, though, right?
No?
Yes,
oh,
because
yeah.
He would not
pick up Chad. We can't tell you.
He wouldn't come for anything besides Green Lantern, so I figured I hadn't read it yet. I read, actually, the Wizard magazine that had the director's commentary about it that said how great it was, and I read a little bit of that, and I went,
What is it? What is it that we're...
What do you mean,
discussing?
What is it? Sinister Corps... I thought he already said that.
No.
Sinister Corps War?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. Is that
and
what
we should go around
sounds
and
funny.
Say who is here today. I am Florence.
I'm Jason.
I'm Jason.
I'm Chad.
I'm Jason. Or Marty.
I'm Mike.
And that's it. And Susie. And Susie.
The computer.
Yes.
And the computer.
Computer
Susie.
Voice is played by Susie.
Susie Majel Roddenberry.
I was just thinking that.
And yes, we read Blackest Night, written by William Shakespeare, drawn by Leonardo da Vinci. It was that great.
Considering it's not out yet, that's impressive.
So
not Blackest Night. Sorry, the Sinestro Corps War. See, somebody threw this free comic book page in front of me, and
Mike's all confused now. What did he read?
Well, they said Blackest Night enough times in here that made me think I was reading Blackest
True.
Night.
True.
Right.
So in your mind, you've already imagined a better scenario.
Well, I figure they can only actually use two titles, In Blackest Night and In Brightest Day. And there's a trade called In Brightest Day that leads up to Sinestro Corps War. I started to talk about this before we started the podcast, and then I was like, oh, we should start the podcast and talk about this. But basically, I got out from the library Green Lantern In Brightest Day, and kind of wish I'd read this before. It almost all the stories in here essentially lead up to the Sinestro Corps War. They all tie in some way, and the author, or not author, but the guy who selected this, the issues to go into here, is Jeff Johns, who I think wrote
The Green
Corps
Lantern,
War.
Yep, and the specials.
Right, so, I mean, he talks in between each issue, there's like a little thing about, you know, why he chose this issue, and half the time it's because he's writing Sinestro Corps War. Like, he doesn't quite say that. He might say it once or twice, but, I mean, he basically says, like, as I was thinking about this and this and this, and it leads you to realize that's what he's talking about. And it also contains a selection from the Green Lantern Corps Annual Number 2, Tigers by Alan Moore, which is a story, it basically introduces the whole prophecy thing that comes into play in the Sinestro Corps War. That's like, is it the 11th chapter, is that right? Of the Book of
Oa.
Oh. The Book of Oa. And it's a story about the guy who came before the main lantern.
Aben Sur?
Yeah, Aben Sur. And he...
That's what we have Chad here for, to explain all the...
Yeah, please, because I have a lot of it lost me.
Well, he was the Green Lantern that crashed to Earth and gave Hal the ring.
Hal. That's what I was forgetting, was Hal Jordan.
Isn't Green Lantern your favorite, like, superhero comic?
Okay, so I have a weird thing about Green Lantern. I have to tell the story.
Which
like,
one?
Basically, I love Green Lantern, but only because of these weird associations I have as a kid. And I don't think I ever read a single issue. I just had a green ring, and I would run around the house with it, and, I mean, I don't think I was even, like, saying anything from this, you know, I think maybe I'd seen a Green Lantern comic in the library.
Hold on, you can't
recite
the oath?
Like, I have, you know, I could,
meanwhile,
maybe now,
real
because
Green
I've read
Lanterns
it.
We're looking down going, yeah, right.
Maybe now because I've read it 30 times in the Sinestro Corps War. But, yeah, I mean, I do have some special place in my heart for Green Lantern, and I'd really never read any of it until this series.
So who do we think are the better poets, the Green Lanterns or the Sinestros? Because they each had their own poem.
I think the orange ones were the best poets.
There's a whole bunch more poem.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it used to be the Green Lanterns had different oaths, but then they kind of consolidated it into Hal Jordan's oath.
They're the Shell Silver Stains of the Universe.
I know. I've actually been reading some of the other old stuff now, like this last week. And, yeah, I noticed, like, suddenly, like, it changed, and everybody was saying the same oath. Yeah.
Alan Scott had some sort of oath.
Yeah, I was going to ask, wasn't Alan Scott the first Green Lantern?
Yes.
But was he a member of the Corps?
No, there was no Corps when he was Green Lantern.
They revamped
but
in
he was,
the 60s.
He's Earth 2.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
They've worked him into the new mythology.
I'd be pissed if I were Alan Scott.
Hey, at least he survived Crisis. You know what I mean?
He's actually really good friends with Hal Jordan. They're buddies.
Now
he is.
As of, like, Green Lantern issue 7. Like, seriously, it goes way back. Like,
I think,
like the 7th issue or something.
I think the way Alan Scott is thinking is that with the way Green Lanterns are dropping like flies, it's only a matter of time before he gets his chance again.
There you go.
So he's, Alan Scott isn't a Green Lantern anymore?
He was never a Green Lantern. He was the Green Lantern before there was a Green Lantern Corps in the original series, like in the 40s.
But he's still around, though.
Yeah.
What is he now, then?
He's a Green Lantern.
Yeah. But not a Green Lantern.
Exactly.
Right.
He's clear.
Very good, very good.
By
very good.
George, I think. He's got
again, us. Again, I'd be pissed.
Chad, if you would explain this for us.
He is somehow infused with some Soulfire thing that was part of the magic lantern that he had, which was different.
Right, and they talk about how in this awesome book, this In Brightest Day book, the second story is, okay, I thought it was number 7, but it's actually Green Lantern number 40, where they team up and they defeat, what's his name the first time?
Sinestro?
No, it's the old Oa guy.
The blue guy.
The guy with the manhunters?
Was he the guy that was trying
the
JLA Avengers?
Oh, Krona, maybe?
Yeah, it is Krona.
It is Krona, yes. K-R-A-O-N.
So Alan Scott's a Green Lantern impersonator.
Yes.
Not unlike a
He's from a parallel universe.
He is the Green Lantern in much the way Jay Garrick was the Flash.
Yep. In exactly the same way, pretty much.
Yes.
His ring didn't work against wood.
Yeah.
It's right. Wow. If it was yellow wood, then they'd be really
except the yellow woodman. He was unstoppable for both lanterns.
I think it's just IKEA in general.
So anytime a scarecrow came by, oh my god, yellow and wood, no.
He always fought Solomon Grundy because he was made out of swamp materials.
Yeah.
So he just went looking for people he could pick on.
No, they didn't. That's how it works for every hero. The villains find them.
Right. They have
material.
Like, you know, complimentary.
You could
have
taken out Lex Luthor in a minute.
But the thing part of being a lantern is you figure ways around that by doing things like, you know, it's like, okay, his ring doesn't work against wood, so instead of
fixing the damn thing.
No, instead of, like, using a ring creation against something that's wood, you use the ring to pick up something that's not wood and beat the crap out of the thing that's not wood.
Ingenuity.
Exactly.
Green Lanterns don't
dodge,
that's
you,
though,
so. Like,
no, see,
would not think of such a thing if you were a Green Lantern.
Well, no, see, I would have thought...
and you would get squished.
I would have thought upgrade. No,
They're very clear.
Green Lantern
if 2.0 the yellow impurity is removed from the lantern, it will stop working.
It would be a blue lantern.
That's said many times in the old comics. But they can't. It's just the rookies that can't control yellow.
And it's interesting. I mean, they're expanding the mythology in it, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's exciting that they're telling new stories, instead of just rehashing. Oh, it doesn't work against yellow. Oh, it doesn't work against yellow. Well, now they're actually talking about why it doesn't work against yellow and that kind of thing.
Yep, they're giving a reason to everything going on, and they touched on that, and I went ahead and read Secret Origins, which is the Green Lantern after that, where they started going into the people who questioned, why doesn't it work against yellow, and how the Guardians were putting them down and everything. So Jason's totally right. They're working on explaining things better and giving it a solid base so that you're not like, doesn't work against yellow, what does that mean? You know.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, since we're on the subject of colors in the DC Universe, yellow in particular, what does yellow kryptonite do to Superman, and what would happen during a team-up of the two against yellow kryptonite?
And they got rid of all of the kryptonites
yes.
in the crisis, I believe.
Yeah,
all the green. Green.
But the old gold, what did the old gold do?
I think it made him powerless, didn't it?
Yeah, and I thought red, well, wait, red, I thought, took away all the powers.
No, red made him crazy.
Yeah.
Made him evil.
So that was from Smallville.
I know.
Well, Smallville followed along. I mean, it
did it?
It
well,
got
Smallville
its ideas from the comics.
That's true.
Gold kryptonite, I think, turns a Kryptonian human permanently. Like, that's a comic book permanently,
yeah.
Which is like
yeah,
for a couple of issues.
Yeah. That's like comic book dead.
Yeah. Hey, they never come back from the dead.
You ever read any of the John Byrne Superman Batman Generations? They have.
I haven't read those.
Like stories that are kind of outside of the DC universe, the Elseworlds stories,
yeah.
Where Superman does have kids. And I think they expose one of the kids to kryptonite, and one they don't. Some form of kryptonite.
Just
yeah.
For torturing purposes?
So Lois could actually carry the child to term.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
A little messy. If it... One little kick in the gut and...
Woo! That would hurt.
Yeah.
Foot right through the belly button.
As opposed to Superman's sperm, you know, being rocketed out. And...
He comes in a lead cup. And then artificial insemination.
Artificial
hello!
Insemination.
Wow. Like you didn't know that.
Yeah, but wouldn't his sperm just tear that egg up?
I mean, it's all the way through. That's why you have it under a red sun.
Yeah, we've talked about
it. There's a Larry Niven essay from years ago called Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex.
I have no idea what you're talking about anymore.
Really? Oh, yeah.
I thought it was...
Cool.
You're sure it's Niven?
Yeah.
I thought for some reason it was Ellison.
No, it was Niven.
What comic book is this?
No, it's an essay. It's a short essay by Larry Niven.
Yeah,
you
comic
know, it's
books only.
It's very, very...
No pictures.
I need
Ooh.
Pictures in order to read.
Yeah, it basically deals with all the difficulties of the possibility of Superman breeding with Lois Lane. Well, and
wow.
Even before he starts breeding, the difficulties of him masturbating during the course of his life and the amount of super sperm that would be cycling the atmosphere right now, just zooming around
think about you
would have
super
to achieve
formula.
Orbit. So
you know what, that's
a
big assumption that Superman's sperm would be any more or less powerful than
a
human sperm.
I think it's an assumption that Superman masturbates.
I bet
he does everything super, though.
He's
he
too squeaky clean.
Super masturbates.
Super, yeah.
Okay, I think
so. Would you
have a little?
Would you call
topic
that
of
super baiting?
Yeah, let's talk more about Green Lantern masturbating.
Mike, go. Sinestro.
I did feel like those four human lanterns. They were a little buddy buddy. There were some moments where it was
a campfire and an asteroid does not a gay encounter make.
No, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't prevent it. A few more panels, and I'm sure nature would have taken its course.
Guy finally comes out of his shell and admits.
You know, that would explain a lot about Guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
It would.
If he was
positive
gay, it would really explain.
Who thinks he isn't?
It wouldn't explain that terrible fashion sense.
That's true.
There is that.
It was the
although that could be
created,
a beard.
Though.
You know,
well,
it could be a beard.
But Mike,
much like ice.
Mike, I love both of us dearly, but we both dress like crap.
That is a hot shirt.
It's only because I can't
afford
right it.
So wait, so
I
he's
do what
the,
I can.
He's the one who, when he came about, that he was the only one again. Is that
no, that was Kyle.
That was Kyle.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know
what?
This the one you're talking.
Well,
about.
Here
who's
we'll
Guy
do a
Gardner?
Quick rundown of the Green Lantern.
Yes, please.
The first Green Lantern
maybe
in the 40s was Alan Scott. That was. Back
he's
in
not
the golden
him.
Age.
He's
right,
not
in
that story.
We can forget about him because he's basically not in
yeah.
the
and then he's a
wannabe. In the Silver Age, after like superhero comics stopped being made for a while, in the Silver Age, when they started bringing superheroes back and recreating golden age superheroes, they created Hal Jordan Green Lantern. And that was the whole core thing where he inherited his ring from Abin Sur, who crashed on Earth in a rocket and made Hal Jordan a Green Lantern. Then there was Guy Gardner, who was the Green Lantern who wasn't. Basically, he was another choice for Green Lantern other than Hal Jordan, but Hal Jordan was closer, so Guy didn't get his chance. So he's had kind of a chip on his shoulder.
I just read the issue, actually, where the Owens, the old, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, are, like, just sitting around showing Hal their devices, and there's, like, here's the device that shows you the past as it could have been.
Yep.
And
yep.
Then that's how that came about.
Then there was Jon Stewart, who I don't actually know Jon Stewart's...
He was in the Denny O'Neill era.
But what was his origin? How did he... Like, Hal decided to stop being Green Lantern for a while. He wanted to focus on his relationship with Carol.
And they picked him. But before that, he had been training Stewart as a replacement.
Okay.
They decided to proactively select a replacement and train him in case something happened. Then Ring would go to him.
Okay.
Well, wait, so how did a guy become a Green Lantern if he was the one who got passed over?
In the crisis back in 85... they decided to deputize him. And I think it was issue 198, 199. He actually plays a big part in the whole final, or not the final crisis.
But crisis.
The first crisis.
So
yeah.
He knew that he missed this opportunity, and then he was just running around grumbling for the next, like, however many years, and then suddenly somebody was like, here, be a Green Lantern.
Well, he
actually
knew Hal.
He had met him, yeah.
Yeah, Hal had been like, hey, this guy looks so cool, I should go meet him in real life.
Yeah.
He didn't know that he was passed over until much later.
Right.
And he was a super nice guy, and he didn't have the personality at all, and he sustained a brain injury saving a child. And when he came out of that, he had this totally
asshole.
Different personality. Supposedly like Roseanne Barr when she had a brain injury.
Really?
Yeah, she came out and she was all crazy and became a comedian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know she had an origin story.
Yeah.
All superheroes do.
Yeah.
You didn't know Roseanne was a
even
super
then,
bitches.
In Zero Hour, Hal Jordan was again Green Lantern. He went crazy, killed all the Green Lanterns.
Wait, was that
no.
when he was possessed by Parallax?
It was when he was possessed by Parallax.
No. Well, they brought him back.
At the time, he killed them all.
He
blew
into the power battery and took all of their...
He took all their power.
And
He killed Kilowog, and Kilowog came back. He killed the Forgotten Lanterns.
He
went through and killed all those Forgotten Lanterns.
Yeah, Forgotten Lanterns.
Okay.
Yeah, he killed all of them, and because they are the first line against him.
Yep.
So but he basically got rid of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh yeah.
But one Guardian was able to rescue part of the lantern and a ring, and came to Earth and gave Kyle Rayner the ring and made him a Green Lantern. And that's because he stumbled out of a bar
drunk
into an alley.
Yes.
Yeah.
Closest thing yet again.
Closest thing. But in this case, it wasn't even the closest person that was worthy. It was
just closest
person.
Yep.
That was Kyle Rayner.
For a much funnier story, though, read Justice League that has Guy Gardner in it. Where he again suffers a brain injury and becomes a nice guy again.
Although a super nice guy.
Super nice guy.
Captain Marvel look like he's a bastard.
Yes. No, it was great. The Justice League was really funny. Yeah. So, and that he got by getting in a fight with Batman, where Batman knocked him out, and in looking for his ring, he found a mouse and hit himself in the head. There you go. That's the kind of series that is. Yes, we all remember it.
But we all loved Justice League back then.
Justice League was awesome.
It was great.
Anyhow, back to...
The Sinestro Corps War, which we haven't even...
Right,
nobody's even said, Mike, what do you think of the Sinestro Corps War? Go!
Not a bad idea. I thought it was overlong. I thought there was too much going on, way too many characters to keep track of. It got repetitive after a while. Some neat ideas, some neat moments, but overall, the idea was a little bit better than the execution.
Florence, I don't want to start
agreeing.
I had a hard time staying awake, but that's sort of endemic.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah. Well, there was just so many people to keep track of, and very difficult to get emotionally invested. So I was kind of like, okay, this is happening next, but there were also lots of really silly moments, which is fine, but I guess I don't read as many of the silly comics, and so it was you know that was another barrier for getting really invested in it. It wasn't bad. I wasn't that into it.
Susie, go.
I got really, really tired of the space battle that just didn't end, just moved locations. Lots and lots of like cannon fodder getting killed, but nobody important, so it didn't feel all that relevant at the end. Like all the, you know, unkillable bad guys stayed unkillable and nothing changed, and I don't know, this was not my favorite selection.
Okay,
all done solely
okay.
During
like
Chad here
than others, but yeah, like just the constant space battle, just yeah.
I was disappointed that one guy, the Sabat Yat,
Sodom Yat
didn't actually die, because that was the first time I was like, oh, you know, they're actually telling you something about someone, getting you invested in them, and then they'll actually die. No.
Jason,
me, I did not like. Oh yeah, you didn't go. You go. You're next.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I can see where you guys are coming from with it being a little overwhelming, but hey, it's war. You know, war is hell, man. part of it, I think, though, was that this was more of, you know, the summer blockbuster crossover, but it was a self-contained summer blockbuster crossover where you really had just the two series, and if you wanted, you had the extra ones.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, an entire company-wide crossover like Secret Invasion or World War Hulk or Civil War or Infinite Crisis or...
Any crisis
where it really was company-spanning. So you could follow it in two series. Now, it did rely kind of heavily on continuity. That's Geoff Johns for you. But I think, you know, you can. I can't think
wrong with
that. Read it without.
It's not like I didn't understand what was going on. I just didn't care.
I mean,
I think that it didn't bother me that there was a lot of back continuity that I didn't know about. That, you know, that comes with the territory of reading comic books.
Yeah.
But one thing I didn't care for, which really made me disinterested in the whole Green Lantern in general, core in general. I wanted more of just the human ones, the ones that I was somewhat familiar with.
Oh, I didn't realize you were so speciesist, Mike.
He is.
Well,
wow.
If I'm reading Green Lantern comic, I'm reading... The thing is that all the other Green Lanterns were really cliched. They were, you know, you had Kilowog, who was very much a cliché drill sergeant sort of guy.
Wait, is that the Poozer guy?
Yes, that's
Poozer.
Poozer
guy. Yeah. How many times did he say Poozer? You know,
says
that's
Poozer
a,
all the time.
Florence was calling me Poozer the other night.
So, you know,
we don't even know about yours. At all.
I really liked him.
Same thing with the guy that became Ion. What's it, Sodom Yat? Is that his name? Very cliched as well.
He's
so.
A Daxamite, isn't he?
He's a, yeah.
How does he protect himself against lead?
That's what they
no,
they,
had,
they,
had,
they had.
He's,
lead
he
was his
has
weakness.
A ring that he has to wear even though he has the Ion power.
Oh, because
to
keep
him
lead.
From
that's
bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Get exposed.
Which is, I don't know, kind of the same deal as the whole Mon-El superhero.
Yeah.
Which,
you know, even Guy Gardner was written somewhat cliched, but there were moments that I really liked his character, too.
Yeah.
Not so much all the extra supporting characters that I thought had way too much airtime.
You would have enjoyed Green Lantern Rebirth then better, where it was the more focused on just, you know,
possibly.
And
yeah.
That's
oh, you didn't.
They started.
Yeah, that was the first part
everything.
Of
the foundations for for all of this, John started with that.
Like, even though I read Nova and there's a Nova Corps and everything in Marvel, I want to read about Nova primarily. And the others can be supporting characters, but they should really have too much limelight.
Which is interesting, because right after this is over, they had Secret Origins, where it was 6 or 7 issues where it just focused on pretty much Hal Jordan and Sinestro.
Okay.
In the early years. And so Johns goes back and forth between these big, huge battles and then the personal stories.
Well, when we were going through the backgrounds of all these Green Lanterns, no one's mentioned Sinestro's backstory yet.
Well, Sinestro started his backstory is really interesting, the Super Franks. So. And he was part of the Legion of Doom on Challenge of the Super Franks. Just
kidding. So the backstory is in Brightest Day. Again, the very first story is Green Lantern number 7, the introduction of Sinestro. So,
well, as he was written in the Sinestro Corps, I found him to be a little bit more interesting than any of the other characters in the story. I mean, I wanted to know about... He seemed to have more depth than anyone else.
Well, and that is why, you know, when they have these big event series coming out, they put out and trade all these, you know, in Brightest Day, Green Lantern, so people do actually have access to these classic stories that talk about that Sinestro was the greatest Green Lantern ever before he became corrupted by power. And
yeah. He seems to be more of a one of the ideological villains, much like Magneto, rather than a pure, I want to conquer the universe villain.
I think the story had great villains.
The rest of the villains didn't care too much about.
See, that's what Johns usually does is, with the 4 issues, his extra issues on the end, is he goes back and he focuses on villains. I don't know if anyone's ever read any of The Flash, but he was writing that for a while, and he'd have just a whole villain issue where he'd go over an origin for a villain and kind of get you vested in the villains. And then he would...
And, you know, the villains that you care about are the better villains.
Well, the Cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
I cared more about him than anything.
I thought Cyborg Superman was great. I also thought Sinestro was great.
I wanted to skim over the parts that he was in, honestly.
Really? Oh, you just didn't like it because it was the Fantastic Four. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He didn't read the one-shot, that's why.
Cyborg Superman is a Reed Richards analog.
Oh.
What?
Okay.
Yep. And it's much more interesting reading the one shot, I think, in conjunction with the rest of it.
It's
I was confused when he was first introduced along with the rest of the little blue people.
When they had anything about him. But it seems sad that he couldn't die.
Well, it's that the Cyborg Superman it's basically what would happen if the Fantastic Four went wrong. If the characters, their mutation basically ended up killing them. And it drove, you know, what's his name?
I can't remember.
Harry Henshaw?
Yeah.
Hank Henshaw.
Hank Henshaw.
If it drove him insane. And, you know, he's one of the ones who took over after Superman when Superman died.
Yep.
And so now he's made him kind of a major villain in this.
Yeah.
Along with Superboy Prime.
Which I also like Superboy Prime.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, that's what I like about him.
Well, and he was one of the heroes of the original A Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he watched the whole world go wrong, which is basically what we call the 80s Dark Age of comics.
Yes.
Where they turned ultra-violent and everything.
Well,
and then
that's what he is. Superboy Prime is the ultimate comics fanboy.
Yep.
Who was like, that's not the way comics are supposed to be, and now I'm going to punch people.
Yep, and kill them and fix it. No, I got a big kick out of... I like that the villains I thought were way more interesting than the cookie-cutter Green Lanterns, which just happens when you have that many Green Lanterns. You can't tell who everybody is.
The thing I didn't care for about the general premise was the whole fixation on one emotion for each of the core. You know, the Yellow's fixation on... fear, especially Sinestro's point of view, where you know he wanted to bring order to the universe by instilling fear. So to solve that, he got all these evil supervillains who wants to cause anarchy. How is that going to bring order to the universe? I don't know. I found it
because it got the Green Lanterns to instill the
Lethal Force.
Yeah, which was a cool plot twist. I loved it. I mean, not the fact that they brought in the Lethal Force, but that's exactly what Sinestro wanted him to do.
But
Sinestro's thing was he wanted to bring order to his sector.
And he did.
And that's how he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
it worked.
Before, in the issues leading up to this, they had little stories, Tales of the Sinestro Corps, where they would introduce one of the villains and how they brought about fear and how they were selected.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right, so that's in this excess.
Yeah.
So we have the three trades.
And one thing they mentioned in the first volume, which probably happened in a side comic that I didn't read, was that they had selected Batman as one of the Sinestro Corps.
Yes.
Well, the Ring did, yeah.
The Ring did. That, and that was a great issue.
I want to read that.
Oh, that wasn't in... What was that in? Why do I feel like...
it was in the book just briefly, like... So this ring said you caused fear. That was like, that's it.
I thought there was only a couple panels. I didn't think it was...
Green Lantern 17. Yeah, it was only three pages.
Well, I must have
But 17 wasn't part of the Sinestro Corps.
It was right at the beginning when they were battling somebody and...
17.
18.
You brought 18.
Because it had a twist.
It was the prelude to Sinestro Corps, where Sinestro was going around recruiting all the villains to his cause. And, I mean, Sinestro has this agenda to create order by instilling fear and everything, and maybe he recruits all these people, and it doesn't go as planned. I mean, that would make sense. Just because he wants to instill fear, create order by instilling fear, doesn't mean that everyone he recruits is going to go along with his agenda.
Right. Yeah, they can only be placated so long before they have to destroy
something.
First three
pages. Yeah. That's kind of like any supervillain team-up.
Sure.
They always end up...
There's always an inherent flaw with the supervillain's plan.
Because they all have the self-serving...
And the Batman thing didn't seem like it was Sinestro's plan. It was just the ring went to Earth and said, who creates the most fear on this planet? This guy.
Yep.
And so that was the part that I liked about it, where they're like, well, you really can't skip Batman when you go to Earth.
I thought the Batman as a choice was good for Earth, but I thought for the whole sector, Lobo probably should have been the choice.
Mm. Oh, good point.
And I don't agree with Adam Sir's son being chosen, because he really didn't instill fear in really anything. I thought him pathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it, after it left Batman, did it go to Jonathan Crane?
No.
No. Did they
later
go
on
in Jonathan Crane?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Later on.
It's been a while since I read these when
after,
they were coming out.
So. After they killed Abin Sur, then it went to Jonathan Crane, but then they stopped it from going to him.
Oh, that's right.
Wasn't it? It was two of them. Who was it? I don't know.
For those not in the know, Jonathan Crane, that's the Stark.
That's the Stark, yes.
I did find the...
Who doesn't know that?
The battle of... what was the Green Lantern planet? The big...
Mogo?
Pool ball in outer space.
Yeah.
Mogo.
That was kind of silly to me.
Mogo
that
doesn't
there was
socialize.
This giant ball that looks like a Green Lantern symbol.
Like Green Lantern.
Well,
that's his ring.
Yeah.
His ring.
Yeah.
I know.
Plus
but
he also serves a purpose. He directs where all the rings go.
Yeah.
I
understood that. I kind of found it funny. And that battle went on way too long.
I'm actually finding it interesting where Mogo directs where all of this goes. But as they're getting more into the whole spectrum, that the spectrum is really the power, and maybe the Guardians guide the green spectrum and Sinestro guides the yellow. But I think what we're going to find out is that it's, they can only channel and guide it so much. It's a power that they tap into.
Yeah.
And so, again, just because Sinestro is all about order and fear doesn't mean that he's not, and he doesn't end up getting controlled by the yellow spectrum force as well.
I do think it's kind of presumptuous then for the Guardians to be the Guardians of the Universe when they're really the Guardians of a color.
Yeah, well, they only tapped one color. They want to be the Guardians of the Universe, but they decided to, go, hey, we'll use the middle one, we'll use green. And as our power source, so it's not that they
and they are arrogant. I mean,
oh yeah,
that's part of being the Guardians.
Yeah.
And this is the first time where there has been a scale of rings on the order of any of the Green Lantern rings. Because before, it was just Sinestro had one ring. There was no core. Mm-hmm. This is the building of that whole core.
Right. And his ring was created by the Weaponers of Quart originally?
Yeah. No, this is where the other color core that's going to, you know, Blackest Night's going to be all about them, I guess.
Yep.
But this is where they got their introduction, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the pre-comic book day got into that more.
I haven't read that yet.
Blackest Night intro.
And I think it's actually kind of awesome, really. What was the one I read? Oh, it was the Rage of the Red Lanterns?
Yeah.
That was not part of this. That's part of Final Crisis, Rage of the Red Lanterns, where the Blue Lantern, where, was it, one of the Red Lanterns is draining Hal's power ring.
Yep.
And he's like, he's going to die in space because he's going to be totally exposed to space because he has no power. And all of a sudden, his ring starts charging, and it's charging at 80%, 100%, 120%, 150%, 200%. And it's a Blue Lantern. Blue represents hope, and the blues inspire the green and supercharge the green. So the blue and a green is always tied together. They're paired together. And it's...
Yeah,
I liked that.
Well,
we've
just seen the origin of the blue in the end of Sinestro Corps.
Oops, sorry.
Why do I think at some point we're going to get to the fact that if you mix all colors together, in some cases you get black, and in other cases you get white?
Well, yeah, that's what we're all hoping for.
I think they're going to have Hal Jordan wear every single ring.
Yes.
Is the goal.
Yep, he'll be the only person to have used all the rings.
Why Hal?
Because he's Hal.
He's
awesome.
For the guy that's the greatest Green Lantern... he sure screws up a lot. I was thinking about it. I mean, he killed the Guardian or was responsible for one's death way back when. Had to spend a year in exile. Decides wishy-washily to give up the ring, then get it back. And they still honor him as the greatest Green Lantern. I think that's kind of funny.
One of the kind of things that I thought was interesting was the way people kind of hated him for his time as Parallax.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great, because when he was Parallax, he was a son of a bitch.
Although it did get a little old, the way they just kept, you know, swinging insults.
Well, Batman just never trusted him the same way.
Oh, no, and he shouldn't. No, I think that's a great idea.
Go ahead, Jason.
No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, with this, someone mentioned, who was it who mentioned the colors, that all the colors together is black, or all the colors...
Susie.
That's what I thought.
The computer.
I have what I... Here is how I would like Blackest Night to... Like, the hero of Blackest Night, the one who is going to save everything...
Oh, my God.
Is
where this is going.
Color Kid from the Legion of Substitute Heroes.
Oh, you've mentioned this already.
Color Kid, where he his power is to change the color of things.
Yes.
He can, you know...
He would be powerful in this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he could
change the time of the war, man.
Although, would just changing the color of a ring really change the properties of the ring?
I don't know. Would it?
It would be kind of silly.
Let's find out.
Exactly.
Let's call
and Jeff Johns recently wrote the Legion episode of Smallville. So he's involved with... He wrote the Legion episodes of... Or Legion issues of... Was it Action Comics? So he has Legion background. Here is a question. Legion of Superheroes takes place 1,000 years in the future?
Yes.
Where are all the Green Lanterns?
Good question.
They are exiled, actually, from Earth. There is no Green Lantern to be placed in our sector.
Well, but Legion of Superheroes is, you know,
is
all kinds of worlds.
But they've mentioned in there that Green Lantern is...
was that in the Action Comics?
Wasn't in Action, it's...
Was it in Legion of Superheroes?
I think Legion, one of the many, relaunches. They've talked about it.
Okay.
I like my idea for Ultimate Green Lantern, and for combining two different
publishers. Okay, yes.
I mentioned this to Jason before, where it's not a Green Lantern Corps, it's just like, I don't know what you'd call it, but a Lantern Corps where there's seven members, each of them with a separate ring, each of them representing a different thing, but still needing each other. So you'd have Sinestro being obviously the Yellow Lantern, and probably Hal Jordan being the Green Lantern. And, you know, one represents fear, one represents what is it, willpower? And
the emotion of willpower.
Yeah.
Or yes. Life, as they
yeah.
said there.
Of, like, Power Rangers and Rainbow Bright there.
Yeah. It is definitely like the Power Rangers.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
True. But,
yeah.
But, you know, under my premise, they would have different agendas, but they would still be as necessary to the universe as any of the other members.
That you could not actually get rid of any
right.
one.
Yeah.
You could call it the Power Rangers.
Oh. Oh.
You could.
Oh. Oh.
Listening.
Oh. Be dumb.
All right. Chad, what did you think of Green Lantern Corps? Go.
We skipped
you. Oh, I did. Yeah, I thought I talked. Anyway. I didn't, though. I liked it. I liked the Green Lantern issues. I liked the special to begin with. I did not like the Green Lantern Corps issues. I thought they were poorly written and poorly drawn. They were relatively interesting for some of the stuff that happened, but everything that happened in the main Green Lantern, and the people who read the trades might not know necessarily which
yeah,
was which.
Yeah, totally.
And so for me, there was a stark difference. I'd go from, oh, this is really cool, and then I'd pick up the Green Lantern Corps issue and go, oh, really? Oh, that's because it's this guy and this art. And so when it was Green Lantern and it focused more on that, I really, really enjoyed the story. I love watching green rings fly overhead because a ton of Green Lanterns just died. Having snipers was a great idea. The Anti-Monitor, but I mean, I know the history of too many people. So for me, it's like, the Anti-Monitors, the Lantern, they're fucking awesome. He nearly destroyed the entire multiverse, you know. So I got the biggest kick out of it from a fanboy perspective, which of course makes it a horrible book for anybody who doesn't know everything there is to know about DC Comics. Most of the stuff that happened in Green Lantern was great. The core, you know, so.
Was the core issues like the Mogo?
Yeah,
okay.
The core issue was Mogo, core issue was, if there was just a bunch of lanterns
yeah.
and you didn't know who the hell they were and they were aliens,
so,
that's what it was. If
wow.
they,
Sodom Yat would have been in the core
yes.
issues.
Yes, Sodom Yat was in the core issues. If it had Hal Jordan in it mainly, like him throwing on a million yellow rings and going, yeah, I'm a badass, that was Green Lantern.
But they were all written by Jeff Johns.
No, they were written by this other guy who I can't stand.
Oh.
And that was the core ones where...
core issues.
I tried to remember his name, but I kept going, I will never read anything from him again.
That's so interesting that it was all collected in one trade.
Dave Gibbons?
Well,
Tamashii.
Dave Gibbons.
Tamashii. It was Tamashii.
Reading it in trade, because it's all supposed to be going on at the same time, so I would read an issue, and they had to, like, a guy got sent off to go get a painting to... show to Kyle and
yep.
blah, blah, blah. So
yeah.
he gets sent off, he comes, he brings the painting, everything's going on. The next issue in the first two pages is like, hey guy, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to get a painting. Even though he's already gone and gotten it, you know, in the previous issue.
Yep.
Actually,
and there's lots of other things, like you see the exact same thing happen.
That's because it was switching between, which I actually liked, because you could read this without, you could just read the Green Lantern and not read the Green Lantern Corps and pretty much get the whole story.
I kind of think I would have liked it a lot better if I'd done that.
You would have had a different version of it, because the Green Lantern Corps, when they lifted the ban to kill people,
mm-hmm.
they're like, sweet, this is great, we're going to kick their butts. And that was on that planet where they started killing everybody. In Green Lantern, they went, they did what? I can't believe it. And so you kind of see that difference where Hal Jordan and the other ones are like, that is wrong. This is the wrong way to go. Whereas in the midst of a battle, the Green Lantern Corps, by a poor writer, in my opinion.
According to the trades, the other writer was Dave Gibbons.
What?
He started writing the Green Lantern Corps, but...
But here's...
He
was an early issue.
Volume 1. It looks like Dave Gibbons wrote... Green Lantern Corps is 14 and 15, which were the first two issues in...
Yep, and he wrote 17. He didn't write 18, which I think kind of... Well, the fight between Ion and Superman Prime, I did like that. That was the only good thing that I thought came out of the Green Lantern Corps. Because I like beating the crap out of Superboy Prime as he goes, no, really, you're just wrong. Rip, you know, that to me was fun.
The main moments where I actually, you know, kept my attention, I wasn't frustrated with all the battles. I was actually way more interested in that when, like, it was just this one guy that we had some information, Sodom, whatever. We had some of his backstory, we knew who he was, and it was focusing on him. And
yeah.
that, like, I just... wanted more of that kind of, rather than the constant huge battles where.
And it is the blockbuster, like you said.
Yeah.
Of the.
I think every time I hear the name Sodom Yat or I read it, I think of sodomy.
Yeah,
it's just,
so it should make you happy.
But he's like supposed to be this great good guy, and
No, he's a jackass.
I actually am kind of a fan of sodomy myself. So. What are you saying, Mario?
I'm not saying that sodomy's bad.
Chad, opinion on sodomy? You're next in line.
We haven't gotten Chad for the sodomy core war yet. Yeah. So. Which side will I be on?
Exactly. What ring will you choose?
Are you a top or a bottom, Chad?
Chad's obviously a bottom. Power top, man. If,
so
when you
Chad,
put a
go.
Green Lantern ring that can take any shape, you're always a bottom.
I thought it was good in the scope because it's going to change the whole DC universe here on out, and it's in 11 issues. I thought that was good. I did like the Green Lantern issues better than the core issues, but I do like a lot of the tiny characters from the 80s, like Jen Chance, I thought was awesome, and I thought Johns really could have done something good with him, and I thought it was a waste that
he killed
him.
Yeah.
I
the raccoon.
Which one was he? What was the name that you...
Chance.
Oh, I thought you said Jaden.
Which
Chance.
One was he?
The one with the coat that was like Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
They called him,
okay.
They said he was much like Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
And I didn't care for them getting rid of the no kill, but it did serve a purpose, and it makes Green Lanterns now scary.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the police coming at you, it wouldn't be as scary if they didn't have a gun, would it? You know, that's
also,
kind of the whole perception is they have that power.
It tests the willpower aspect of them, too.
They're mall security guards.
Well, when the cop chases you, I'm not afraid they're going to shoot me down. I'm afraid that they're going to give me a ticket.
But how threatening would it be?
You're from Minnesota, aren't you?
I mean, law force wise, if they didn't carry
a
gun.
Not
you know?
On foot.
I think as far as like, a hardened criminal wouldn't be as afraid of them.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it would have been tough to write some way for them to not have lethal force against the Yellow Lanterns.
The problem
Lanterns can kill you and you can't kill them.
Yeah.
The only thing that the lethal force to me, the only thing that really changed was the battle of Gaga, what's his name again?
Mogo,
sorry.
Well, and again, just because they have lethal force enabled,
you know,
doesn't mean that they have to use it.
Right,
because
everyone seemed to reject it for the most part after that. Like, most of the major Green Lanterns were like, oh, we're not going to use that. That's wrong.
Well, and that's what's going to happen in the future.
It's going to build.
You're going to have the whole...
Yeah.
Well, that's where the Alpha Lantern Corps comes in.
Because they had a trial right after of somebody who killed
a...
Right before she got the...
She got the okay.
She got the okay to kill.
They had lethal force enabled, but he was surrendering. It was Evan Sir.
Oh.
Evan
Sir's son,
yeah.
Whose name
Emma.
Is...
Now, if
Emma
I read it, if I read it right, the limitation on the killing power was that it had to be on a Sinestro Corps member.
Yeah, and this guy was a Sinestro Corps member.
Okay.
It was Evan Sir's son, so he was
indeed. Was it only on Sinestro Corps members?
It changed after this was
over.
Like the... When they were going to use lethal force and the ring shut down on them.
Oh, yeah, that was
and
great.
And Sinestro kept saying, a Green Lantern is an empty threat.
Of
that. So that was a great line, I thought.
That's kind of what I mean, is now they are the lawman. They can, you know.
But only against Yellow.
See, I'm Cormac. Or
they amended it. Now it's against everybody.
Yeah. But you also got to think, these are like space cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. They're riding around. They're out in the frontier.
Sure.
You know, they have
they're
that power now.
Cops.
Yeah. And I was happy that they had the fight with Superboy Prime again on Earth, but all he did was hit Bomb Man with...
Bomb Man.
Yeah, the detonation guy blew up his suit, so he's going to reform and have a new suit. And ripped off...
No, he ripped off the other arm.
Ripped off wrist's other arm. But
that
he did not kill anybody.
No, I know. He should have.
Disappointed me because he'd killed people before.
Yep.
I mean, he went through them like nobody's business and just tore them apart.
Hmm.
And I wanted
to
see more of that. I wanted to see casualties.
Yes. That's what he does.
One thing that amazed me was when they picked out the main Sinestro people, they picked out killers. I mean, Cyborg Superman on the level of Superman, Superboy Prime. Who just got through doing a killing spree.
And remember, and, Coast City was destroyed by Cyborg Superman. So these are people, mass killers. The Anti-Monitor wanted to destroy the multiverse and did a really good job.
Yeah. One,
they had big killers.
They got like
in their
60% of them.
Right.
One minor plot point that I didn't like is that they used Superman as a cameo, and I'm sure he had his own stories going on with the and tie-ins with the Sinestro Corps War.
Yeah.
But Superman was as powerful as any of the other members of the Sinestro Corps. For the most part, I don't know if the big Anti-Monitor guy
not
is
even close to Anti-Monitor,
but
Superboy Prime, really.
Really?
Yeah.
But he was only in for a couple panels, and he didn't really do a whole lot.
He was in one of the side ones. They had had the entire Justice League, and they showed how they fought.
But to have him on Earth and not to have people like Superman and Wonder Woman play a much bigger role in the Endgame didn't seem to make sense to me.
Well, that's how they kept it self-contained. That's what I liked about the crossovers. They went, hey, you just need to read Green Lantern.
Sure, I understand that, but it just doesn't. It didn't seem logical. It didn't seem feasible. If you're keeping things in the realm of as much suspended reality as you can with this. But they should have had a bit.
Did you read the one-shots?
No.
Because the one-shot took what happened in the fight with the Justice League.
Okay.
So it had.
I think it's one of the problems of the DCU is like these huge stories for characters that aren't Superman.
Yep.
But you have Superman, so the logic thing is, well, why doesn't Superman just come in and save the day?
Yeah.
Well, then how does that, you know, how is this about the character that I'm writing?
Well,
then?
And everybody
I don't mind Susie's argument if Superman's not part of the story, but to have him in the story a little bit and then not have him have a bigger part in the Endgame doesn't make sense.
Well, they did mention that he was fighting Cyborg Superman while the rest were trying to take on Superboy Prime. So he had his hands full.
So if the one shot has the whole thing, what was Superman doing during this?
Sure.
So it did try and take that whole, and he was facing one of the major villains in it.
I'm reading 52 right now, and one of the reasons why I like 52 a lot is it's, you know, the story, Superman's in it, Clark Kent is in it, but he's not a major part of the story, and it's well explained and everything. I don't know who hasn't. I'm sure everybody knows what happens in 52, but...
No, I never finished it.
But you know why Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman's not in it.
Nope.
No?
I haven't read it.
Well, if you read Final Crisis, you would have...
I didn't read Final Crisis.
Okay, then never mind.
I haven't read 52 yet.
52 is the year that Superman, Batman, and
Wonder Woman are gone.
But it's also kind of a cop-out because all of their titles did 1 year later.
Sure.
So they never had to go a year without Superman.
Well, right.
Batman, Wonder Woman.
52 is the story of what happened inside that year.
Because that would have been DC Suicide.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're not going to get rid of their major character.
Well,
no.
They did now.
But
killed off Batman.
See, someone like me can read 52 without knowing what came after that and enjoy it because it really gives good focus on minor characters.
Yep.
There's a large cast, but it's well-paced, and the stories are given equal amount of attention. So it's really as ambitious as the project it was, it's probably some of the best writing I've read in comic books.
Oh, 52 is amazing.
Yeah.
So is that going to be our next book club?
No, it's way too big.
52 issues.
52.
Yeah, but it's only 4 trades.
Yeah, but each one has 13 issues.
Yeah.
And it follows up from Identity Crisis.
Several of us have already read it, so it's not that big of a deal.
And I didn't need to read Final Crisis to know what happened.
You know what's going on in, you mentioned that 52 doesn't have Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman in it.
It's got Clark Kent in it.
Yeah, but do you know what's going on right now in the Superman and the Batman comics?
No. Okay.
Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent aren't in them.
That's because Batman died.
Yeah, it's the whole battle for the cowl. Actually, Batman didn't die in R.I.P., we find out. But
not a big
don't
surprise.
Tell me that.
And,
not a surprise.
But, it's more to do with the Final Crisis and everything. But right now the whole deal is that in the DC core titles, it's not these characters right now. Like in... I think in Superman,
it's Skrulls.
No, it's Nightwing and Flamebird. I think are in Superman, Guardian is in Action Comics, and then in Detective Comics, it's Batwoman.
Oh, I want to see more.
In I bet you do.
She's a lesbian. I like making chicks.
And then in
when is she naked?
Batman, it's
that's
nobody
what he was alluding to.
Nobody knows who it is in Batman right now. I think it's, you know, various other characters, and so they're doing this whole thing about, you know, we're having our core titles without our core players.
So, Chad, how excited are you for Blackest Night?
Pretty excited.
Yeah, well, it is the Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman doesn't matter.
Wonder Woman doesn't seem like a core. Wonder Woman doesn't seem like a core title because hers doesn't do as well in sales. You know what I mean? She's definitely a core character in the DC universe.
She's a great character. They don't put good enough writers, and they can't seem to handle her.
Just like Aquaman,
do they have the new one?
Yes.
I heard she's. Remember, I read
left.
About 3 years behind. So
I thought she left quite a while ago. Did she come back?
Issues I'm beginning have all been written by Gail Simone.
Hold on, I did read some by her where she was the ambassador, and that was cool. Anyway, I don't think we asked Marty
what he thought.
True.
Yes.
I liked it overall. I think I actually got more into it kind of at the beginning of the second trade. It felt like it was picking up, and then I felt like the end of the actual story, I didn't really care. And then I started reading the third trade, which had all the supplemental stuff, and I was like, this is awesome again.
See, I read the supplemental in the middle, because you're supposed to read them. It tells you right where you're supposed to put them in, so I put everything in order.
Right.
Because they fall right, like Superman's fight falls in between several issues, so you know right when, you know, Superman's taken off, and then you get the backstory of Cyborg Superman, the backstory of Superman Prime, and it's like, oh, I see how this all fits in, and then,
I didn't feel like the side issues... Like, none of them I went, oh, that really would have made so much more sense or anything like that. Like, I didn't get that. But I did feel like the main story felt disjointed. And now that I hear, you know, understand that there was a difference, I do feel like, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird case where the trade almost is, it almost feels like it's ruined it. Like, I wish I'd had a bunch of single issues and ordered it all.
I'll just throw this out there. I started, obviously, reading comics single issue for ages. Then I started going, oh, trades, so much easier, and I started reading trades. And I was finding that I enjoyed the comics less. And I thought, well, they're just not comics I like, because they're in trade. And then I'd start reading ones where I'd start with the issue, go to the trade. Something about reading in a trade I don't like as much as having an individual issue.
Hmm.
And it took somebody else to tell me this, because I was giving my girlfriend at the time different ones, and she's like, eh, there's something about reading in a trade that I don't like. I like having the individual issues. And I went, oh my God, so do I. And so when I see that I can get it in trade, I'm like, ah, for some reason, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't, you know, I don't, and it's really stupid. It's just how I'm handling it. So I made sure that I had the single issues for this instead of the trade so that I could...
I think some things are made for trade and some things aren't. Like this,
true. Yeah.
It didn't work
very
as
true.
Trade, like you said, because things were happening simultaneously, but you were reading them simultaneously, and it felt very repetitive.
Yeah.
No,
that's a good point. Because, like, Walking Dead I read in trade, and,
yes.
And I seem fine
that's
with it. I love
much
it.
Better in trade than in
But that is kind of a very linear...
Fables, for example, in a whole trade, and then I think that's even worse. I read it issue by issue. But I think it's probably better to read as trades because the story, so much is going on from month to month, and you can just sort of sit it and read it in one.
It flows better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also the amount of action that happens in an individual issue. Like in Walking Dead, for example, reading a single issue of Walking Dead could cover approximately an hour of time, you know?
Yeah.
And
real
so,
time.
You read that, and you're like, that's it? That's
nothing
that's get
yeah, nothing yeah.
For, you know, another month.
But there is a big difference. There is going to be no cameo of Invincible in Walking Dead. There's
it's self-contained.
It
is very self-contained.
One story.
Mm-hmm.
Sinestro Corps War was not self-contained at all.
No.
What I did for Sinestro Corps War was I actually took a thing and put it, a divider, put it down in front of my face, held one issue in front of each eye
very good.
Read it simultaneously.
Yes, you're very talented.
Okay, I want to continue. I had a few more things to say. I think one thing that I really thought was interesting that we haven't talked about at all was how I think this is really a commentary on, you know, U.S. society and culture, and how, you know, the Sinestro Corps really is, you know, the Bush administration. And I think, like, you know, that felt to me really obvious, but I'm curious what other people thought about that. It doesn't seem like
somewhat,
other people.
Yeah,
are
I can
green.
See where you're going with it.
Which one was Cheney?
That, like,
yeah, who was Cheney?
That would have been.
That was the third
anti monitor.
Totally, Cheney was definitely the anti monitor.
What was that, Susie?
Well, I think in the sense that like there was they felt the need to make the citizens afraid, so that we wouldn't question what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, you totally thought of it when you were reading it, but, you know, luckily it wasn't pushed so much that I felt like, you know, I remember reading it, and I'm like, oh, this is just like what we were doing with instilling fear in people. Then I'm like, but at least it doesn't feel like they're shoehorning a political agenda down my throat. So
they're not bashing you over the head with
it. So I you know, you see it, and you're like, yep. And,
unlike Marvel's Civil War, which was very much pushing a political agenda down
the
throat.
They had a Squadron Supreme Nighthawk versus Hyperion, which was set in Darfur.
Oh, wow.
I didn't read that.
It was just a four-issue thing, and it was, God.
Slightly political.
Slightly, yeah.
No, and I mean, it applies to anything. What kind of regime do you want? So many use fear to get order, and, you know, it was the conflict between that and non-lethal Green Lantern.
Sure.
Order and power are, intimately linked. One of the things that I did think was shoved in my throat was the Pearl Harbor analogy all of the yellow attackers on the Pacific Naval Fleet.
At the beginning when they
I didn't come in at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was like someone from the actual U.S. military saying, I'll get those yellow mothers.
That was a big eye roll.
Oh, I missed that. I remember the thing, but
it's
I did not put that one together.
It's a very eye-rolling moment where they're like,
if
I wish I had
any
one of those
perception whatsoever, because I did not.
No.
Racism in comics. Next topic.
Yeah, I feel that there was a larger analogy to World War II than the Bush administration, in my mind.
Yet you didn't have Hal Jordan calling his Asian friend Pie Face anywhere in this.
That was awesome.
Because that's what he used to do.
Yes.
Back in the 70s, he had a friend who was, I believe, Eskimo.
Yep.
And he would call him Pie Face all the time.
Yep.
And
it
was his best buddy. Yet they don't do that anymore. He's come back.
Why not?
Yet even mentioned it, which I think is funny that they will back down from even saying anything like that. Yet they'll make these other comments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't.
Well, and I mean,
say a flaw from the past.
You know, that other one is coded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you noticed it, but I didn't notice it.
I didn't notice it at all.
I guess
I'm going to go find it now.
Mike is finding it, I think.
Well, I'm trying to find the Pearl Harbor moment.
And then
that's what I'm trying to find,
At the end of it, where Guy comes back, and they have the image that is taken from the sailor arriving home in Times Square, where he's kissing Ice.
Ice, yep, they totally did that.
And it was a remake of a famous photograph of a sailor arriving back home after World War II and kissing his best girl.
I think I know
that. That was good.
No, it's not his best girl. It's just a random
woman on the street.
Was it?
A random woman on the street.
Okay.
Because he's got his arm like completely around her head and he's forcing her back.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be a very triumphant photo. And I always think, like, that poor girl, she's just like, what the fuck?
I never knew the history of it.
Yeah.
A random nurse, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, I always understood it to be a random person as well.
Oh,
symbolic of the oppression of women.
Gosh darn it!
Back then was
a
terrible person.
All your memories shattered.
You man!
Does this change you as a human?
Without knowing any of the history of that photograph, you see it and you see two people kissing.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're an oppressor.
Before you knew... I honestly want to know. When you first saw that picture, ever, like before knowing anything, would you think that... Would you focus on that it looks like he's forcing himself on her?
Well, no, in fact, I actually didn't know the history to this moment either. And I now I hear the backstory, I think of it more as an Oscar moment with Adrian Brody and Halle Berry.
Oh, that was...
Yes, seriously, I got so mad at that. But in that one, her body language made it very clear that she was shocked and angry. And whereas the photograph...
She covered
it
very graciously, but
yeah.
At the moment, it was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And this covers the fact that Jason doesn't love women.
I'm kind of surprised that Brody didn't, like, draw blood with his big nose. That shocks me.
But looking at the photograph, I do not see any hint in the body language of what's being captured that it is unwelcome. But hearing the story, I imagine it was.
There is one aspect of the storyline. Actually, it's a pretty major storyline, especially with the setup for Blackest Night that I wanted to ask people about. And that's the rewriting of the Book of Ola and the 10 new rules.
Yep.
The first rule is obviously lethal force.
Kill them all.
They introduced a second rule, but I don't remember what it was offhand.
It's right at the end.
The Alpha Lanterns, right?
I believe it's the Alpha
Lanterns. What was the exact rule again?
I'd have to look it up.
But what does everybody think the other eight are going to be, or some of them?
They started introducing them later on.
I got to say, the one thing about the Sinestro Corps War that they really did is made me excited for what's going to come up next. And that's what I think a good story can do. It was self-contained enough that I didn't feel like Secret Wars, I had to read many things. And I really got excited for Blackest Night, a million different colors, and really excited to find out what the other rules are, what's going to happen with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Any good story that can get me so jazzed to go, huh, I wonder what's going to happen next.
It kind of excited me for that too, but with all the crossovers, I am really sick of Marvel and DC having these all-encompassing by every title.
I don't think Blackest Night is supposed to be that way, though, is it?
I thought Blackest
Night was like, no, it's not like an orange.
There are the one shots. There are the one shots that you could get or not get.
Jason!
I forgot to shut off my phone. I never used the ringer.
But
I can't get it off. There we go.
It's kind of.
Sounds like a personal phone.
It's a new phone.
Disappointing that this is what they're going to expect the consumer to do is buy.
Oh, yeah,
isn't that the ultimate goal?
Well,
it's
true. I mean, marketing and everything, but sometimes I just want a good story with good art.
No, and I agree. I feel like, you know, that is one of the big reasons that we don't normally read something like Green Lantern. I mean, we don't normally read a big DC or a big Marvel title because it's much easier to talk about a self-contained story if you just pick, you know, one off the shelf. And,
Yeah, Jason just handed me a checklist of the Blackest Night, and it looks like they're going to do some limited series, one of three of Batman, Superman, Titans.
So how many total issues do you need to buy to get the story?
Right now?
In 20, 24. Looks like, or,
yeah.
Oh, 24.
Which,
wait, 6 times 4 is 24. Blackest Night, I will.
Oh, I am.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
after getting excited for this.
I'll read it if somebody forces me to in a book club.
All those of us who liked the Sinestro Corps War will go out and read it. But we have the history.
But see, I'm less interested in the Blackest Night because I didn't think the idea of a separate core for each color was really that great an idea. So,
and I love it.
I thought it would have been something that would have happened sooner because they do have other colors, like the Star Sapphire has always represented a different color. And so is Sinestro, but they haven't had a whole core. Whereas the Star of Sapphires, they easily could have made that happen years ago, but they haven't.
And I mean, it's going to be Carol Ferris, isn't it?
I don't know. Earlier in the issues, she got passed over.
Yep.
Did she get passed over?
Yeah. And they're actually making her a very strong character, even though they've kind of exited her throughout the time.
Oh, you know what? Jeff Johns is going to pull her in as the Star Sapphire, though.
I would like to see her back in because she could be a strong
girlfriend.
Female character.
Carol Ferris is Hal Jordan's girlfriend.
The Lois Lane.
Okay.
Except she
ended up being one of his villains, his major villains in the past.
Mm.
Really?
Yeah, the whole, I love you so much that if you are not what I want you to be, I'm going to kill you.
They picked a girl that looks like her to come back, and then while she was in the issue, and then they picked Hal's current crush.
Yep.
And I would like to see Carol have a ring, because they're making her a much stronger character.
Did you read
a strong woman character?
Okay,
I have not read that yet.
You're talking about the person on that cover?
Yeah.
That's the strong woman character?
That's
no.
No,
Star Sapphire.
That's the
embodiment of lust.
But it's like
Ferris herself. When she used to get taken over by this force.
Yep.
But her character runs the company, you know, controlled Ferris Aircraft where Hal worked and wasn't always eager to go out with Hal, you know, and would always put him in his place. you know, she's not the Lois Lane where she was like, oh, Superman, save me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know.
Yeah. And she was a pilot, too. So
yes.
She was also this.
Have you ever seen the, like, those ones, there are two-sentence summary, like, bad summaries of movies?
I want to.
Or other things. There was one for, like, there was a whole site, like, listing them, like, the most famous one being The Wizard of Oz, being, like, young girl, kills first person she meets, and teams up with other misfits to kill again.
Brilliant.
But there's, I think, one for Green Lantern, I don't remember exactly, but it was something like... test pilot wears jewelry and hits girlfriend.
That is good.
Did he hit his girlfriend?
Well, if she was a villain, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we have to. And like it. No.
What about his parallax? Did he hit her then?
No, he just killed people then.
Yeah.
So who's got the best Green Lantern costume?
Oh, okay. There is another panel.
Oh, I know. This girl. Right here.
I always liked her.
Yeah.
Aricia?
You're saying Aricia now?
Yep.
Or is it Aricia?
I would do.
Because her boobs are coming out and she's got a skirt. Nobody else wears a skirt.
Well,
I do like Cal Rainer's.
With all the humanoid, the humanoid male lanterns are covered head to foot.
Oh, yes, of course.
The male lanterns all have, you know, at the very least, a really deep
I think these are geared towards men.
Maybe 14-year-old boys.
Oh my god, I just realized that.
I mean,
I'm sorry, I wouldn't have inflicted it. You know, I didn't think about that, but this
hey,
is really
guys
awesome.
Are wearing dresses, so.
That's true.
They cross dress.
But men in robes are cool. I gotta tell you, though, one last thing about the Blackest Night that's coming up. The idea that the Black Rings resurrect dead people is fucking awesome.
Well,
so
it resurrects them without actually bringing them back to life.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
They're zombies.
And
so it's zombie lanterns, and they hang out at Bruce Wayne's grave. Come on.
They've shown
that's
that.
That's not
library.
Cool.
You read Blackest Night Zero, right?
Yeah, just that little one, yeah.
So how come all these people are buried in Gotham Cemetery?
Because Gotham is where
like
you kill
pet
them.
Pet cemetery.
Yeah.
You know, why are
Ralph
and Steve
I'm sure Gotham just has more cemeteries than many.
Why is Ralph and Sue Dibney and Robbie Raymond, why are their graves near Bruce Wayne's?
It's easier to protect them all when they're all together.
Ralph Dibney?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
You know,
yeah.
That's
oh.
been kind of
oh, yeah.
spoiled for me then.
Oh, I know. There's all sorts
big,
of.
He's got a big part in 52.
Here,
so.
Do you want me to royally
oh,
spoil who was on the cover as a Black Lantern, which is going to be so awesome? Do you want to know?
Sure.
Do you want to be spoiled?
It was in an
okay.
ad in one
it was
of them.
Was in an ad in
actually.
One of them.
It's not Captain America, is it?
No. What's his real name? Right, I'm horrible at...
Arthur Curry?
No.
I saw an
the
ad...
Earth 2 Superman.
Kal-El?
Oh.
Yeah, no. Well, whatever they call him. Is it Earth 0? He has like a Superman something. You know how there's Superboy
Prime?
There's
well, Earth
he's
2 Superman.
Crypto?
Okay, by the way, Crypto going after Superboy Prime was awesome.
Awesome.
That
yeah.
was a great moment. I don't
I
care
loved
what you're
Robin
saying. I loved it.
Just standing
yep.
there saying,
what are you going to do?
And he whistles, and the dog
yep.
comes.
Yep.
Just awesome.
Yeah, no. That was so there's a lot of moments that in Green Lantern Corps that if you've read a ton of crap beforehand, you go, sweet, and otherwise it doesn't mean jack.
Wait a minute, what chick were you saying would be a good Star Sapphire? What was her name?
Carol Ferris.
Yeah,
Carol
they've
Ferris.
Got her right there. They've already revealed that.
Well, she is one?
Yeah.
Well, they haven't,
oh, no
they
shit.
Haven't done that
well,
in the
that,
comics.
Well, that could also say that she was historically.
Star
no,
Star
no.
Star
that's
Star
good.
Star
those
Star
are
going to
be the new ones.
And
those are the new ones.
There was a point in time where they picked someone that looked
so, yeah,
same.
To be a strong character, you have to be really slutty.
So is there one?
Yes.
Do you have the one after this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course
well,
she does. He's
yeah.
bad.
But speaking
right.
of
well,
costumes, though, I had to highlight this one panel that where they're all, there's a bunch of Green Lanterns all disguised, and they're basically just regrouping about to, you know, coming from one fight and about to go to another. Everyone in the entire 2-page panel is fully dressed except for this one guy with this patch missing right
well,
above his crotch.
Well, if you saw
oh,
when
patch
he first
yeah.
left that battle,
Yeah, there
was a lot less than that.
Oh,
on
I noticed
him.
That.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Like, whoa.
Those were regenerating.
Where did,
well, they do regenerate their outfits.
No, but then...
But
just
this
just wait, she's not done.
Right, and then, like, then the, yeah, so right next to that is of someone saying, like, get your clothes on, people, like, have some pride.
No, it's him. It's him saying that,
oh,
and he's the only
no,
one.
No, it was Kilowog saying that.
Oh, yeah.
So where is the
no no the, this weird guy with the weird head was saying that.
This is
oh,
the,
it's a, it's the
oh yeah,
it's the Adam Adaxium.
Sodom Yat.
Sodom Yat. He's
right.
Like that.
He's not the one that's
you know
that
there.
It's
that
he was getting
there.
Ready for some Sodom Yat
after the battle.
Oh, I see.
Where he's got a lot more tears on it, including this weird patch right on his side.
I'm just saying, there's some beefcake here for.
Oh, there are.
Players.
Yeah, there are.
There,
yeah.
There have been
that
have
one
been
that
comics.
Wasn't just the girl getting singled out. That's kind of rare.
Yeah.
There have been rips in costumes before where I've been kind of like, I didn't know that this artist had an interest in.
I do find it funny that when Kyle Rayner burst out of Sinestro and was all naked, it was Guy Gardner that provided his underwear with his lantern ring.
No, really?
And probably a butt plug as well.
Give me a little something extra there, Kyle.
Yeah.
Oh wow, you're
glowing,
right.
Glowing,
I missed that totally.
Boxer briefs.
Look, that is a riot.
Well,
found the
well,
precious
yeah, trophy. I mean, strategic ripping has always been around. Like, do you remember like the third X-Men movie where?
I try not to.
Unfortunately,
Phoenix,
yeah.
Yeah, but, like Phoenix is doing her thing, and Wolverine is
yeah.
trying to get her, and like every shred of his clothing, like, is whipped off of him except for his pants.
Much
yeah.
like the Wolverine movie where he's
like,
mostly naked
yeah.
through the whole thing, but oh, hold on.
I didn't see Wolverine
didn't
yet.
See I haven't seen it.
No, actually, none of us have seen it.
Wow, alright, never mind.
Have
I saw
Star
Trek instead. That
was awesome.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that reminds me of back when I first started reading the X-Men, and every single issue, Rogue would get her costume to tatters, except for a couple strips that covered
just
up the nipples and a little patch around her crotch. Like,
good times.
It was like, it must have been made out of Sterner stuff.
Nipple
guards.
I'm glad they just showed one.
There's an ad that showed.
We seem to be
like
breaking up into side conversation. Should we
coming back.
Call it a close? Do we have anything else to go over?
Okay, there is one moment that I had to, that I like, exclaimed out loud. That was my biggest groan moment, which was randomly someone's dying, and like I hadn't really been keeping track of this particular character, but I guess he was important. He was sick, and
Guy
blah,
Gardner,
blah, blah. Yeah, and and then it turns out he this whole time he's been sick of this by a bad guy
yep.
virus, and they're like, hey, I know someone who wants to kick that virus's ass. This good guy virus, and then he's all better.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was a tap
out. It was lame.
Smallpox virus, which
what?
Yep. And
well,
they've done a backup story telling that villain's whole origin.
And the origin of the guy was great, because they had this backup story that talked about that little virus.
Yeah.
A guy, Green Lantern, comes back to his planet, sees all his people dead. They killed his family, they killed everybody. And a Yellow Lantern is sitting there. So he's like, son of a bitch. So he grabs the Yellow Lantern, knowing that that Yellow Lantern has to come back for it. Goes out to the middle of the desert, starts waiting for him. All of a sudden, starts choking and dying. He didn't realize that the Yellow Lantern had been inside his body trying to kill him that entire time. And so he's dead, his ring flies off, and this little yellow viral lantern comes out and whisks off with his Yellow Lantern and everything. And you're like, dude, that's not right.
Well,
and
that
then
was how Kyle's mom died.
Yeah, and that's
yes.
how Kyle's mom died. And that's how, you know, this little thing has been going around killing them insidiously. So it's like, it's not your typical... You know, army. You've got sharpshooters. You've got, you know, a little virus that comes in.
But just
so,
the fact that, like, okay, so the bad guys have a virus. So the good guys have
wait,
a virus.
Wait, oh, wait. Hold on.
No,
the good guys had the virus first. They did have that virus first. That was in the Alan Moore Mogo story.
Yeah.
That,
yep.
That they mentioned that way back in the 80s.
Yeah, it's really old.
So it was really bizarre, and I think the ending was kind of, you know, just, you know, written very quickly and not... but I like the origin story of the Yellow Lantern, and then to go, oh, there was a green, so they set it all up, and they let it, you know, if you've been reading, you know, again, it's something you've got to read in a while.
So it seemed so pulled out of their ass.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
The one thing I didn't care for was that there didn't seem to be any lasting repercussions to the characters, you know, other than Kal Rayner not being Ion anymore.
Well,
I liked the idea, for a while it looked like Guy Gardner might have been blind or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, how cool would that be to have a Green Lantern that's blind but can still, like, use his
power
ring?
There's actually a story.
are you talking about the...
By Alan Moore.
The not the Green Lantern, but the green...
not the Green Bell, it's...
the Green Bell.
It's the
butterfly?
Sharp Bell?
Yeah, Sharp Bell, yeah. Because there is no color, there is no...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just read that one as well in a collection of Alan Moore stories.
And I don't mind that, you know, nothing huge happened to any of the characters in this, because as an ongoing series, there's so many times where nothing happens. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, hundreds of issues go by in Superman and nothing really happens. So the idea that they've rewritten the Book of Oh, the Anti-Monitor has been destroyed, the new lanterns have been created, stuff has happened, and a boatload of lanterns that we kind of know from reading other things did die. So it didn't need to have huge things like Hal Jordan loses an arm, but it moved the story along, it was entertaining, and it paid homage to so much that had gone on before it, and made us old schoolers really excited about the, you know, what are they going to do next.
With four human Green Lanterns and a multitude of other Green Lanterns, and yeah, sure, some Green Lanterns died, but no one really...
Some Green Lanterns.
But no one of consequence, really, and they're going to get replaced. It would have been nice to see some sort of real bad stuff happen to
them. Right, and even, like, with the villains, hardcore villains they bring in, you know, and then they're like, and we've defeated them, and you think, oh, wow, we've, like, actually defeated these guys, and they seem so tough, and then, you know, 2 pages later, and they're fine.
that irritated me, because one of the villains should have been wiped out, and Anti-Monitor was the closest.
And if this is just a setup for the Blackest Night, which maybe it is.
It's a trilogy. This is the second part of the trilogy.
Okay. What was the first part?
Rebirth? Yeah, Rebirth, which was awesome. Yeah. But I had read that, so I didn't want to make that the book club. I didn't understand how this worked.
We still don't either.
One thing I was kind of disappointed about was before they had just the one yellow ring, and Guy Gardner had the yellow ring for a while, and it supposedly drove him crazy, but nobody knew where the yellow ring got its power from before, and they explained that it used to sap the power from the Green Lantern's rings and take the power from them and use it back at them.
Because it didn't have its own power source.
But it didn't have its own power source, and it was on the other universe. But that was back when Sinestro was just working on his own. And I was kind of disappointed that they didn't keep that up, because that could have been a very interesting
point. If there was a finite amount of power between both sides.
Yes, and blue rings charge up green rings, as they've done later on. It would have been nice to have that draining effect, which now seems to have gone to the red rings, from what I understand. But they didn't even mention that Guy had used a yellow ring before. Hal,
because he should have put one on.
Yeah. He was with Hal when Hal put on all those rings, and Guy should have known how they worked.
Yeah, but Guy wouldn't have been able to resist it.
I don't know.
I think Guy doesn't have it in him. He's a chump. One punch, man. One punch.
It's true. He's got a glass jaw. So.
Yeah.
Well, and it was a punch from Batman.
True. It was Batman.
Still.
One punch. And I missed it.
So, Marty, do you think you will read the piles and piles of Green Lantern library books that you picked up?
Not a chance.
Not half of it, but I've read several of the trades already.
I'd have to say,
what was your favorite?
New stuff from Johns has been awesome since Rebirth on.
You know, I'm really digging this. I've actually just read two issues of Green Lantern.
Well, see, the Green Lantern issues are great, because it's Jeff Johns.
Yeah, it's pretty good. My favorite trade was by far the one that I mentioned, the In Brightest Day, which I really feel just like
that is,
it just
I've never
collects
seen it.
A bunch of shit, and they were all good.
Prior to Jeff Johns with Judd Winnick, wasn't it?
For a while, and Ron Mars, I believe.
Oh, Ron Mars, kind of.
Yeah.
But how was Judd Winnick's stuff? Because I read some of his stuff.
It was all right. I mean, he had introduced the...
he
one of
primarily
the
wrote with Kyle Rayner when he was doing that.
And he'd introduced, like, a gay side character, which I don't know if the DC Universe had had up until that point in time.
Who was the one that wrote The Chicken Refrigerator?
That was Ron Mars.
Oh.
And he seemed to love just doing horrible things to the girlfriends of...
Well, Kyle Rayner's first girlfriend, just so you all know, was shoved in a fridge.
Killed
which
by
Gail Simone kind of... Gail Simone got a little bit of fame based on her essay regarding the treatment of women.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
Well, he kind of... Wasn't there a backstory that... Or a side story about a real-life story with the writer that his... He was going through a bitter divorce when he wrote that story, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I heard rumors of that, but I. Yeah.
But well,
it makes it horrible.
And that could be. I mean, is it true or is it lore? You know.
Either way,
that's why we have the internet.
So, either way, he's a bastard for it. But, I don't know.
Well, I don't think you're necessarily a bastard for writing something horrible to a person in the comic book.
No, not at all. Not at all.
That
if you single out female characters for that sort of thing, then that becomes a little.
No, Brian K. Vaughan is then the worst man hater ever. So, just so we're clear.
Really?
Why the last man? He killed everyone but two males on the planet. So, really?
Yeah, that's a different
thing. I don't think so.
It is, though.
who wishes that there were women more, a woman more? Brian K. Vaughan or Joss Whedon?
Who loves women more?
Oh, Joss Whedon,
totally. Who would rather...
Wish they were born a woman?
Who, yeah.
Oh,
Joss
Whedon.
Joss Whedon, totally. Totally.
Brian K. Vaughan was living a male fantasy by getting rid of all the competition.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
so,
true. That's
yeah.
true.
When you're the last sperm
exactly.
donor.
Jason thinks like Brian K. Vaughan.
You do. You really do.
No, I meant you.
Oh. I thought Jason wanted to get rid of all the competition. But that was...
What?
He doesn't want to get rid of all the other men in the world.
Oh, that's right. That would be a problem.
What if York was gay?
Yeah. You're the one man left alive on the planet, and
no,
you're
that
gay.
That truly is a tragedy.
What did you say, Susie?
I was going to ask who has the next pick.
Chad.
No, I cannot.
Why
cannot?
Not?
I cannot because my schedule is so chaotic.
So?
I cannot pin down.
I don't think the day
you have days
chaotic.
Off. You choose the day off, and you. Or you choose something frustrating and don't show up.
We thought Jason was going to do that.
What?
We didn't think you were going to show up.
Oh.
We were taking bets.
I knew if Chad would be here, I'd be here.
I don't
know.
It's a bromance.
Because you guys pick titles that I usually don't even hear of.
Well,
or are on the fringe, so
oh,
I don't want to pick something
pick
that you guys aren't.
Dude, yeah. I picked Green Lantern. Nobody fucking likes Green Lantern. It's you and me, and we're done.
But that's an interesting conversation. You know, it widens our horizons, too.
That is the point of this, is to read stuff that we would not have otherwise read.
And I picked it because I hadn't read it yet, and I wanted to. So pick something you haven't read yet.
Right. I picked Buffy because I wanted to force everyone to read it and talk to me about it.
I love Buffy.
Well, if that's the case, I want to pick the... First Annihilation series.
Oh, that was good.
I think it kind of goes into the competitor's version
of
space. You know, their space deal. And I thought it did have awesome lasting effects in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah. It's still going on.
Yeah. And it was an interesting read. Some of the miniseries are
so-so. It kind of reintroduced the cosmic side of Marvel.
Yes, because for years they hadn't done anything
with Marvel's
their
got a really rich
powerhouses.
Cosmic.
So if you hate space battles, you're going to hate this.
But
you should have seen Mike's eyes light up, though.
Oh, yeah, Mike, before he gets to heaven now.
Because
Mike loves Marvel.
Yes,
I really liked Annihilation. Annihilation was great.
Annihilation was great.
Now, are you just going to do the Annihilation series, or are you going to do the side? Because there are four limited series that lead up to Annihilation.
I'll leave it up to everybody. I would rather read just the Annihilation series. I have read them myself.
Mm-hmm.
The side series don't offer anything.
Except for the Super Scroll.
They set up the Annihilation story, though.
They do.
It's like an introduction to the...
Have you guys heard the Super Scroll song yet?
No.
Okay, we will play that after Rendon. Maybe we can figure out a way to edit it in.
Okay.
We could.
Well, anyways, so Annihilation
is
the next book club, and we'll figure out the details later.
And that's something that Mike had actually recommended to me after years of not really reading much Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started picking up more Marvel.
It's written by Giffen? Was it Keith Giffen?
Yes.
Giffen's awesome.
Who's really well known for his cosmic stories.
And the Justice League. Let's not forget the Justice League.
And, you know, he's still playing a big part in the cosmic Marvel universe, because now they've got the... Nova's got their own story. The Guardians of the Galaxy has their own comic. They've got the War of Kings going on right now, which is the Kree versus the Shi'ar.
Did Giffen...
Do some Amazing Legion superheroes?
No, Giffen... Bobo? He's not a Marvel exclusive, is he?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I don't hear too much anymore about people signing exclusives.
He wrote that Ambush Bug Year Zero, didn't he?
Yes,
that's his kind of stuff.
Ambush Bug.
He did create Ambush
back
Bug
in the 80s,
but
didn't he?
I'm not sure if he wrote Ambush Bug Years
Ago. I don't think it's exclusive. So, I mean, it is possible that he might have written something for DC prior to joining Marvel exclusively, and they're just not publishing it until now.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
Cool.
So we've got the next pick,
and
hopefully we'll do it sooner than we did this one.
Well, we'll target about a month, and Chad, you can tell us what your schedule's like when we get closer.
Yeah.
I can pull out the issues for everyone to read.
Excellent.
I think you still have a lot of mine.
It is very easy to get from the library as well, and I always
is.
Yes, but it's easier to get from Mike.
It's a few years.
but I don't care so much if the library comics get destroyed.
It's true.
That's fair. We'd be very nice if we did that.
All right. Hopefully we will actually leave you with... the Super Skrull song.
Woohoo! Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Cause his left arm is stretched like it's made out of plastic. It's as elastic as Mr. Fantastic. His right arm's an orange rock's for skin. From the shoulder down, he's as strong as Big Ben Grimm. He can turn one leg invisible, which really isn't all that practical. Unless you're extremely gullible, you won't get fooled by Super Skrull. His other leg is flammable, same thing as inflammable. He crosses his legs and then he wears his visible leg and still can burn. Though his appearance is comical, and raises many questions anatomical. His features are as valuable as the features of his fellow Skrull.